even though we've got these COVID cases spiking and we're told not to travel on Thanksgiving, we do have good news for you. Yet another vaccine seemed to be very effective against the coronavirus, and that leads off the big three. AstraZeneca, they have a vaccine out. I think they developed it in conjunction with Oxford University. And if I'm not mistaken, Natalie, my friend Andrew Lloyd Webber was one of the guinea pigs. Remember when he got a jab? And, you know, right? Here we say a shot. In America, we say a shot. All the British people say a jab.
A jab? Really?
I was talking to my friend Imogen Lloyd Webber last night. She's Andrew's daughter. She said, yes, Dad got the jab at Oxford. So this AstraZeneca thing is said to be 70% effective. That's pretty good. Pfizer's 95% effective, and the other one, was it Restoration Hardware vaccine or something?
There's so many. Moderna. Moderna's the
Moderna, that's yeah. what I'm thinking of. Moderna's 95% effective. Now, if I'm going to get a vaccine, I think I'm going to go for the one that's 95% effective.
Of course.
Over the one that's 70% effective. So I think AstraZeneca...
And I also want to be in the one that doesn't have to be in the sub-zero freezing temperatures.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Well, I think, how do I know that happened?
Exactly. What happens if somebody defrosted it and said, "Ooh, not ready yet. Put it back in the freezer." Can you refreeze a vaccine?
I don't think you're supposed to refreeze meat, right?
Yeah, you don't do that to chicken. So I'm going to say no to the vaccine.
The vaccine. Anyway, that is good news for us, and they may be able to roll out this vaccine by December. So, folks, hang on. Going to be a rough few months ahead of us, but I do think we may finally be able to see the end of the coronavirus upending our lives. So that's a good way to begin today. Also in the big three, well, if you're a Trump supporter, I guess you got to bow to reality now. The transition is officially underway. Trump still has not conceded the election, but the wheels of government are in motion to give us the oldest man ever elected president, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And he'll be there for 2 days, and then Kamala Harris will be our president.
Yeah, right.
And running out the big three, David Dinkins, mayor of New York City in the 1990s, 89, I think he was elected. Yeah, he has died at age 93. Now, well, here we go. We got to be careful on this one, right? Noam and Joe. You don't want to speak ill of the dead, of course. But I can't say that David Dinkins was the best mayor the city has ever had. I mean, I will say, compared to this idiot we have now, de Blasio, and we can speak ill of him because he's alive.
Yeah, right.
But compared to de Blasio, you know, Dinkins is Fiorello LaGuardia here. But I lived here in the 80s and the 90s, and I got to tell you, that was a rough time for the city. I mean, the crack epidemic was spiking. You had the riots in Crown Heights. And David Dinkins, nice guy, elegant guy, nice guy, but completely ineffectual. And I've always maintained, and Bartlett, I'd be curious to know your take on this one. I've always maintained that the reason Rudy Giuliani beat Dinkins in 93, I guess it would have been, was because of Crown Heights. Because David Dinkins allowed the rioting to take place in Crown Heights, and a lot of angry African-Americans were going after the Hasidic community there. And I think all those secular, liberal, Democratic-voting Jewish people on the Upper West Side, I thought they looked at Crown Heights and they said, that's a pogrom, and we cannot support that. And I think they secretly cast their lot for Rudy Giuliani. And I think that's one reason why he got in.
Well, Dinkins himself has admitted that that's why he lost. Although there was a report that said it wasn't, he did not hold back the police. But you know, you can get reports saying anything you want. I think you know the issue for Dinkins was he was just a nice guy. He was a real nice guy, and you know to be mayor of New York City, you're going to need an edge. You got to be tough, and not that he wasn't tough, but I just think he was just too nice. I think even Al Sharpton said he was just too nice a guy to deal with the issues that the city faced at that time, including the crack epidemic, which I think, you know, didn't help his situation.
No, not at all. You know, I used to play tennis with David Dinkins, believe it or not. And he was a very nice tennis player. He was a very polite tennis player.
Sure,
He never cheated. You know, I sometimes would call the balls if they were maybe a little kissing the line, I'd call them out, but he would never do anything like that.
I'm shocked that you did something like that.
You cheated. Now, did you realize he died just 6 weeks
after
his wife?
Joy.
Yeah.
Kind of sad there, but he was a great guy. He always wore a very nice white Izod shirt and white tennis shorts when I would play tennis with him on the Upper East Side. We used to meet this tennis group in the morning around 6 o'clock in the morning. Almost every day back. This is 93, 94.
While he was mayor, you played with him?
No, he just lost. So it would be, I guess it would be more sort of 94, 95.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of come in there sort of scraggly looking, not having slept very much. Yeah. Right. And cheating. But no, he would come in and he always had, you know, even his white tennis shorts were pressed. It looked like he had a little, you know, valet to give him his tennis clothes. But he was a lovely man, lovely man. Terrible mayor, but a lovely man. Led is out today. So you want to stick around for the full 4 hours because it's going to be fun. Gnome Layden is here. Good morning, Gnome. How
are
you? Good
morning. I'm doing great. Thanks.
And Natalie's here and Joe's here. So kind of good news, I got to say, Gnome, about the vaccine. I mean, do you really think we're coming to the end of this long, hard slog through COVID?
I sure hope so. I mean, there are reports that people are going to start getting the vaccination in next month, in December. You're going to have, you know, frontline workers, doctors, people at hospitals, nurses, people in senior living centers are going to be the first ones who get to roll up their sleeve. And they may be doing it in a week or two from now. One report says December 11th is one of the dates that they're going to start giving out this inoculation. So if that's the case, it's amazing. The only thing I'm really worried about is, you know, look how hard it is to get a test for COVID, right? And that's a small percentage of New Yorkers who are trying to get a COVID test. It's not a large percentage. How are we going to get all these people the shot, and how are we going to organize it? I hope someone's on top of this, but I don't even know how you start to do this. Let's say 70% of the people want the shot. Let's hope it's that high. How are you going to give this thing out? So it's going to be awfully interesting to figure out how to do it. I don't know if they're going to bring in the National Guard. If you're going to go by alphabetical order, everybody with the last name A shows up on Tuesday. How do you do this?
Well, here's the thing. All right. You know, yes, you're going to have the frontline responders, of course, and elderly people and people with underlying conditions. But I mean, let's be honest here. We know some of our rich friends who are in the bubble are going to get that vaccine before the rest of us do. You know, you and I, Lenone, we're going to be waiting 24 hours outside of the CVS to get a vaccine. Yeah. And other people that we know. I'm not naming names here, but I know a few people who already are like, we're going to be going and getting a vaccine right away as soon as it's unrolled because, you know, we can pull some strings here and there and private hospitals and that kind of thing.
Well, it's shocking that money buys you access. That's news. Yeah.
Yeah. right. Exactly. But no, the lines outside Rite Aid and CVS will be very, very long. So now Trump, the president, has not conceded the election, but the wheels change of the government bureaucracy are grinding away, and now apparently the transition is beginning for Joseph Biden. And well, he's named some people to his cabinet, all a bunch of swampy people, gotta say. My favorite, though, I mean, are you kidding me? John Kerry, John Kerry, failed presidential candidate, is going to be the climate czar.
Right.
I mean, his only qualification is if he's going after fossil fuels. Well, he is kind of a fossil, so I guess he knows what he's talking about there. But come on, John Kerry is the climate czar?
And that's the guy who gets on private jets to fly everywhere. You know, has limousines pick him up. He has homes all over the world. I mean, this is a guy. This is the last guy you want on your climate panel.
Well, he's married to the ketchup lady.
Yeah.
The Heinz 57 lady.
That's where all the money comes from, yeah.
What's her name? Victoria Heinz?
Teresa, Heinz. Maybe?
Teresa Heinz, right. Well, that was always kind of weird because she was married to another senator and he was killed in a helicopter crash.
Right.
And then old John Kerry moved right in there. He saw that ketchup fortune sitting right there. I've been, you know, you're right about that. I've been to Nantucket because my family has my sister has a house there. And you see this big yacht, or no, big sailboat, huge sailboat, kind of a sailboat yacht sort of a thing there. And they say, oh, that's John Kerry's. John Kerry's.
Yeah.
So there's Mr. Climate Czar, only flies private planes, has a yacht, and about 20 houses around the world.
He's a huge polluter, and he's on the climate panel now.
Oh, God. See, this is what I mean. The hypocrisy of these Democrats. To appoint as your climate czar somebody who, I ride my bike around town, okay? I don't pollute anywhere, anything. Except the airwaves and WOR. And there's old John Kerry flying around on private airplanes.
Yeah.
It's just, it's amazing. And then we got Janet Yellen. She's going to be, what, the Treasury Secretary, I think? She used to run the Fed.
The swamp is back.
It is.
The swamp is back.
Wall Street likes her, but yeah, she is part of the old guard.
That's that system. Everybody profits from the system. We like it. We don't like changes.
Nope. Yeah. And you know what's going to happen now that the swamp is back. Guess who's going to be, maybe he'll be our roving ambassador, Hunter Biden. so he can go to all the countries, you know, with his tin cup. Hey,
you know, dad's president, got to take care of him when he leaves office, got to pad the 401k, you know, one Lexus. Here we go. Hey, Lincoln bedroom, for sale again, folks.
Oh, yeah. The swamp is totally and completely back. Big show for you guys today. We're going to talk about the Rat Pack. Had a great interview with a guy who wrote a book about the Rat Pack. That's coming up. And looking forward to Bill Bratton. He's going to be here, the former NYPD commissioner, at 840 to tell us if, in fact, the subways are really, really dangerous. So you want to stick with us this morning. And as I say, it is good news. We have another vaccine on the way, so there is light at the end of the COVID tunnel. Coming up next, though, one of Trump's lawyers gave a bizarre interview yesterday. We have the details on that. Hey, and talk about an easy assignment. We'll tell you the job that a lot of Secret Service people are angling for. Coming up next. So the transition is underway. Sleepy old Joe Biden with his swampy cabinet preparing to take over the White House in January. Trump has not conceded the election. And I have a feeling, Noam, that he's never going to concede. Trump is never going to say, I don't think he's capable of forming the words, I lost. I don't think he can say that. He's never going to say that, right?
Well, he's not used to being a loser in life. I mean, really, everything he's gone for, he's pretty much succeeded at, including going for the White House with zero experience. So, I don't think you're going to hear the words that I lost this race. The narrative that he's laid out is going to be the narrative he walks out with on January 20th.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, one of his lawyers, Jenna Ellis, well, she was being interviewed on MSNBC. And I got to tell you, if I'm a lawyer for Donald Trump, one of the last places I'd agree to be interviewed is MSNBC, which, of course, is anti-Trump. And as we know, one of the leaders of the opposition. So I don't know why Jenna Ellis, her name is, would appear on Ari Melber's show on MSNBC. But anyway, she was there and she says the election was stolen and President Trump won by a landslide. Here's a little bit of Jenna Ellis and let's make sense of this if we can.
Well, the point of this, of course, is to get to fair and accurate results because the election was stolen and President Trump won by a landslide. So let's not forget that President Bush actually won or lost rather at every single lower court stage before ultimately Bush v. Gore got to the Supreme Court. The Constitution and the law was applied fairly and accurately. And we have President George W. Bush, not then as the media, your network included, was calling President-elect Al Gore.
Now, this is where Ari Melber, the host, his eyes are crossed. He looked cross-eyed for a little bit during what she was saying.
Right.
I mean, I hate to break it to you folks, but Trump did not win by a landslide, as Jenna Ellis says. And while Trump is not going to concede, I do think the fact that the wheels are in motion, as Olivia Newton-John said, the wheels are in motion for a Biden. Are you laughing at my
cheese? Just me a second, yes.
You got it, though. You
did. See, Len would never. The wheels are in motion. Yeah, I remember. There was like a bad 80s song. Yeah, right.
Len would never have picked up on the subtlety of my humor here this morning. Anyway, the transition is underway, so I don't think Trump is going to win in any court overturning the election. Although Rudy Giuliani was on Fox last night, and he had something interesting to say. Hit that one, Noam.
Unfortunately, we haven't yet gotten a fair decision. We will. We got to be a little patient. One fair decision, one good hearing, and this will turn all around.
Well, where is that? Where do you think that good decision or hearing is going to be? I can't find it.
It hasn't happened yet. Look, the thing that tells you that there's not a whole lot of merit to this is these high-priced big GOP lawyers who usually jump in an opportunity like this to make some money and go after votes have not involved themselves in any of these cases. None of them. I mean, zero. It's really amazing. You know, all the guys who were on Gore versus Bush in 2000, for the most part, I can't find one that's involved in this one. So that, I think that tells you they don't think there's a lot there either.
I think what Trump should do is he doesn't have to concede the election. He can go out saying, look, folks, Biden's your new president. There was a lot of funny business going on in those democratically controlled cities like Philadelphia and Detroit, where they discovered a whole bunch of votes at the last minute. Something fishy there. But I got to get out of here. I'm going down to Mar-a-Lago to play some golf. But I'm going to run again. I am going to run again in 2024. I guess that would be. So stick with me, my 70 million plus people who voted for me, because what you're going to get a taste of now is the return of the swamp. Is the return of the, you know, the people who went to all the right schools, who have nothing but contempt for all of you who voted for me because they don't think you're very smart. They think you're a bunch of white supremacists and racists. Now they're back in charge. And just wait and see how they behave. Just you wait and see as we form the global alliance again and more plants, manufacturing plants close because, hey, we're for free trade, and, yeah, we can't really worry about the working class people in this country. They're not going to be around much longer anyway. We got to worry about the tech people. Yeah, we got to find the next Facebook and the next Instagram people. They're our people. So I think Trump should just sit it out a bit and wait, and let's watch the swamp rise up again, and the internationalists, the globalists, you know, with their climate change. Yeah, you can't drive your car anymore here in America. China, you can do whatever you want to, because we don't want to take on China. No, 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 no. We don't want to do that. Israel, oh, wow, we don't really like Israel anymore. Got to like those Palestinians instead of Israel. And Saudi Arabia, well, we're gonna be mean to Saudi Arabia because they have all the oil. We don't like them. But Iran, hey, we'll have a deal with them, and they can kind of quietly get nuclear weapons, and we'll look the other way. So I think if Trump just sits it out for a bit there, Noam, he could come back in 4 years.
Can you imagine a race between Joe? How old would they be? Joe Biden would be, what, 81 in 4 years?
Well, it's, and, let's be.
And Donald Trump would be, what, how old is Donald Trump? I don't know. Is he 77?
What is he, 76 or 77? Yeah.
So he would be 80 or 81? I mean, what kind of race would that be between the two of them?
Well, no, it's not going to be between Trump and Biden. Biden's not going to be there in 4 years.
Well,
trust me, it's going to be Trump and Kamala Harris.
I don't know that Trump's going to be there either, by the way. That's pretty old.
Well, he looks pretty, I wouldn't say fit.
Maybe Don Jr., but I don't know about Don.
I don't know, but Trump is still pretty vigorous, so. All right, go down to Mar-a-Lago, Mr. President, and plot your comeback, just as Richard Nixon did. Trump is Nixonian. He's Trumpian. Interesting. All right, time for the news at 6:30 from Joe Bartlett. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Michael. New York City, mourning the death of its first and only black mayor, David Dinkins. He's died at the age of 93. A native of Trenton, New Jersey, he practiced law in New York City before starting his career in politics. In 1989, Dinkins, a Democrat, narrowly defeated Republican Rudy Giuliani for mayor. Shortly after taking office, he spoke at the National Press Club in the nation's capital, predicting a new wave of progressive ideas.
The crest of the conservative flood has passed. The Republicans still occupy the White House, but the conservative coalition has lost its way.
Sound like this today, doesn't it? Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, kind of, although he was sort of wrong about all that, but okay, there you go.
Yeah, the Republican in the White House at that time was George H.W. Bush. So, Dinkins, of course, was served just one term, beat by Rudy Giuliani because of a number of reasons, including, most people believe, the Crown Heights riots. And his death came just a little more than a month after his wife, Joyce Dinkins, passed away. All right, Americans getting COVID in record numbers. The COVID tracking project says as of Monday, 86,000 people were in the hospital. 14th straight day that record's been broken. 257,000 Americans have died. And Governor Cuomo's worried about the situation here in New York. He's expanding yellow and orange zones in the city and says hospitals are feeling the stress.
The last 3 weeks, the number of hospitalizations has gone from 1,200 to 2,700. That is a 122% increase.
New Jersey continues to report a surge in cases, too. The state reported 3,592 additional infections yesterday and 11 new deaths. Well, President Trump is not giving up his effort to challenge the election results. On Twitter, suggested that he is not abandoning lawsuits in a last-ditch effort to change the election. And he says his decision has nothing to do with the federal government starting that transition process to allow Joe Biden to get the intelligence briefings that he has been seeking. Finally here, a Defense Department idea to let presidents and vice presidents who never served in the military to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery is getting some blowback. Problem is, there's only 95,000 spaces left. The Pentagon recommended that in-ground burials be restricted now to Purple Heart recipients, former POWs, and those killed in action. And it also includes presidents, regardless of their military service. But
you can't put Clinton, that draft dodger, in Arlington. Are you kidding me?
Well, okay. Illinois Democrat Senator Tammy Duckworth, an Iraqi war veteran, has introduced a bill now that would keep non-veteran presidents and vice presidents out of Arlington National Cemetery.
I agree.
Some of
that.
This has to do, of course, with Trump.
Well, they don't want Mr. Bone Spurs there. But, I mean, come on. Clinton, the draft dodger? He was totally a draft dodger.
But most of those guys don't want to be buried there anyway. They have their own library where they want to be buried. You know,
yeah,
Reagan's
exactly.
Buried out in California. So
that's true. Where will Biden be buried with a treasure that Hunter Biden collected all these years?
He's going to the Ukraine.
That's right. All right, thanks, Joe. Hey, coming up next, there's a terrific new book out about the Rat Pack, Sinatra, Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop. The question is, how mobbed up were they? The Rat Pack is next. Who doesn't love the Rat Pack? The coolest cats ever, the Rat Pack. And here is a little bit from the leader of the Rat Pack.
It had to be you. It had to be you.
All right, Richard A. Lertzman, a terrific writer. He wrote some really good books. One of my favorite books he wrote is Beyond Columbo, The Life and Times of Peter Falk. Love that book. He's got a new book out called Deconstructing the Rat Pack, Joey, the Mob, and the Summit. All right, Richard, good morning.
Morning, Michael. How are you?
Great, great. Good to talk to you again. So I got to ask you, you're deconstructing the Rat Pack here. So were these guys, Martin, Sinatra, Sammy, Joey Bishop, were these guys mobbed up? Were they controlled by the mob?
Well, you know, Frank owned 9% of the Sands Hotel, and the mob wanted, you know, Vegas was a destination point only for Los Angeles. And they wanted to put it on the international map, and they had a blueprint. The blueprint was to get Frank and have him choose his buddies, and have this great summit, and Mo Dalitz and Carl Cohn and Meyer Lansky. Everybody had their money invested in all these places, and they wanted to make it big. So Frank came up with the idea with one of the great PR guys. To really do a summit 28 days straight at the Sands Hotel. And with it, he brought Dean, his buddy. He had just, Sammy had a car accident. Sammy was a good friend of his. And Peter Lawford had brought him a script for a movie called Ocean's 11. So he included Peter Lawford, and he wanted to cozy up to Peter because Peter's brother-in-law was John Kennedy. And then Joey Bishop was the opening act for Frank Sinatra. And then Frank brought the idea to shoot the movie the same time that they were doing Ocean, the same time they were doing the 28-day summit. And in those 28 days, they did two shows a night, and then during the day they shot the movie. And for 220 rooms at the Sands Hotel, they had 35,000 reservations. It exploded Las Vegas.
So, Richard, let me ask you. I mean, we've all seen The Godfather, and there's the singer at the wedding. And you can tell that, you know, the Godfather, Marlon Brando, Vito Corleone, controls the singer. In your research for this book, was Sinatra controlled by the mob, or did they respect him enough that they, you know, just gave him his distance? And, you know, we're friends of yours, but we don't have to put any pressure on you to do anything.
Yeah, so, you know, all the guys worked for mob owners, but Sinatra was definitely not controlled by the mob. He was a businessman. He knew his business. And they respected that. And the guy who was closest to the mob was Joey Bishop, who even testified at the trial for Mickey Cohn when Mickey Cohn had murdered a man at Rondelli's restaurant in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Frank respected his talent, and Dean just went his own way. Dean just worked for the guys, but that was it.
You know, these guys, of course, were known for being the ultimate partiers, and thank God there was no social media to capture it all, but all kinds of stuff was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, they all had their wives there at this. Mae Britt was with Sammy. Patricia Kennedy was with Peter Lawford. Jeannie was with Dean Martin. I mean, they were not out partying. They were doing two shows a night. They were filming during the day, and they... You know, the myth was that they're out partying and with girls, and you know that there are more five businessmen trying to make a lot of money.
Well, the thing about Dean Martin was, we're talking to Richard Lertzman. He wrote the book Deconstructing the Rat Pack: Joey, the Mob, and the Summit. Now, the thing I always heard about Dean Martin, and I get this from Sammy Kahn's widow, a good friend of mine, Tita Kahn. She says that, you know, the joke was, oh, Dean is drunk all the time, but that he really was not a big drinker. Is that true?
Yeah, Dean used to drink. Dean and Martin told me he used to drink apple juice on the stage. Dean told me one time he had a party at his house, and he went up at 8:30 at night, was watching Westerns on TV, and when the noise came too loud in his house, he called the Beverly Hills police and reported the party, and got it rated while he was up watching movies on TV.
You know, I was watching in anticipation of you coming on. I was watching some of the Rat Pack videos on YouTube, and the person that really popped out to me was Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah,
like what a talent, and he just explodes off the screen.
Yeah, Sammy had such talent. Unfortunately, his body of work in film is not great, but when you saw him on stage, he just was a multi-talent. He could dance and sing. He had charisma. And, you know, it was Frank, Dean, and Sammy that just exploded the Rat Pack. I got to know Joey Bishop, who thought he was the spoke in the wheel of the Rat Pack. But, you know, Joey was just lucky to be there because these were the great talents.
So, Richard, I got to ask you before we run, last question here. Sam Giancana, you bring him up. You've delved into this. You've looked around. The Rat Pack was closely identified with John Kennedy. The assassination of John Kennedy, was Sam Giancana, was the mob, do you think, involved in that in any way?
Well, in the book, we tell the story of $1 million in cash. Joe Kennedy arranged for John Kennedy to rub off on the Rat Pack in those 28 days so he didn't look like Richard Nixon. And Peter Lawford took Sammy back, showed him $1 million in a satchel, and it was given to John Kennedy to take back to his father from the guys like Momo Giancana, and from Bo Dalitz and from Meyer Lansky, so they would keep the heat off. And when Bobby Kennedy went to prosecute Momo Giancana, that's where the theory is, you know, there might have been some mob involvement in the assassination.
Interesting stuff. Check out Richard Lertzman's book, Deconstructing the Rat Pack, Joey, the Mob, and the Summit. Great stuff. Good to talk to you. Take care, Richard.
Thanks so much.
Well, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist kind of person, but I do. The more you learn about this Kennedy assassination, the more you poke around there.
Right.
I do think there was some mob involvement in the assassination of President Kennedy.
You don't think one guy pulled it off on his own?
Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy had an IQ of about 10.
Yeah, he really wasn't a bright guy, no.
No, he was a stooge set up by probably the mob and Sam Giancana. I mean, I don't think it was, some people say it was like the Cubans, this, that, or the other thing, but could have been the mob, could have been the mob involvement. Now, you know who named, here's a little trivia question for you, Noam. Do you know who dubbed Sinatra, Martin, Sammy, Joey, Peter Lawford? Do you know who dubbed them the Rat Pack?
No.
Do you know, Joe?
No clue. No.
Lauren Bacall. No. Betty Bacall. Huh. Who happened to be a friend of mine back in the day. Yeah, she was great. She dubbed
name
them.
Dropper.
Oh, I have a funny Lauren Bacall. I do have a funny Lauren Bacall story, but we're running out of time. I'm going to tell you my Lauren Bacall story. This is a good story.
Oh, please do.
When I get back.
Can't wait.
Shut
oh,
up.
Gosh.
Jeez, come on, guys.
Can we do it now? Do we have to? I don't want to wait.
Listen, good things, folks, come to those who wait. And actually, I got to say, Natalie, you have kind of Lauren Bacall hair. Your hair reminds me. I'm looking at you on the Zoom chat. You have Lauren. You have Betty Bacall hair.
Okay, that's great. Wasn't
Betty,
she
all right?
Betty
coming
Bacall.
Up
in the 20s.
Right. Well, that's what Joe, her friends call her Betty. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I know. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to give you not one but two Betty Bacall stories when we come back. Plus Biden's picking. Lou just said Christmas, and Biden's picking this cabinet. Relics of the swamp are resurfacing. Coming up next. The war. Well, the moment you've been waiting for, my Lauren Bacall stories, or Betty Bacall, as friends of hers called her. So, Joe, you ready for this one? I'm going to lay it on you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Go ahead, Michael.
Are you writing this down? I'm sure it's going to be fascinating.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Well,
is
we
it
were
in
talking
your book?
About no, it's not, actually. My book, by the way, is Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. It's a very good book. Oh, I got to talk about my book a little bit later, too. A lot of stuff I got to do today, Natalie. I don't know if I can keep tabs on everything that's on my...
Yeah, who needs the rest of us? I mean, you know, there's plenty of Michael things to talk about.
Anyway, we're talking about Lauren Bacall, great Hollywood actress, because we just had an interview with Richard Lertzman, wrote a very good book on the Rat Pack, Deconstructing the Rat Pack, Joey the Mob, and the Summit. And it was Betty Bacall who called that gang in Vegas the Rat Pack. So anyway, I was... Lauren Bacall was coming to Broadway. This is many years ago now. And she was in this old Noel Coward play. It was about a bunch of retired actresses living in a kind of the actor's fund, an actor's home. And I'd heard through my sources that Betty was kind of a piece of work backstage. And she was demanding and being a diva, and she, you know, the play was set in the 1940s, but she insisted on wearing her fancy clothes from the 1990s back then. And so I wrote some unflattering stuff about her. I'd also heard she was a Lowell then, and she was having trouble memorizing her lines, and it was kind of stumbling around and couldn't remember the blocking. So I wrote things like, you know, as great and as beautiful as Lauren Bacall once was, maybe she's past her sell-by date.
Oh, no.
And should not be in this play, doesn't know what she's doing. So my editor at the New York Post, he says, why don't you try to get an interview with Lauren Bacall? I said, well, yeah, have you read what I've written about her lately? I'm basically saying she's old and over the hill. Well, try. So I called her publicist. And he says, she's not going to talk to you. I said, well, I'll just ask. He calls me back 5 minutes later, and he says, yeah, she's rehearsing today. Can you come over around 4 o'clock? She'll meet you after the rehearsal.
Wow.
I say, wow. So I go over, and I'm sitting there waiting for the rehearsal to break, waiting for her to come out. And I swear to God, and Joe, are you hanging on my every word here, Joe? No, he's not even paying attention. This is the one and
go,
only
go ahead,
time.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
This is the one and only time in my life that I was ever starstruck. And I've met everybody. Lauren Bacall, she was in her 70s then. She comes out of the rehearsal room. And Noam, I swear to God, I thought, that is Lauren Bacall, one of the great Hollywood stars of all time.
And I'm she looked good. Crash her.
She looked good for 70,000 years old, however old she was. And I just stood up and I gave her this kind of like hand up. My hand was shaking when I shook her hand. I'm in the presence of Hollywood royalty. And I said, I just have to say, you look great. And she gave me that Lauren Bacall icy stare, and she said, yeah, not bad for an old bag, as I read in your column.
Ooh.
And then we had a tremendous interview. She had me in the palm of her hand. I raced back to the Post, and I said, I take it all back. Lauren Bacall is the greatest actress in the history of the stage. You can't miss her performance. And that's how we became friends, Betty Bacall. Another story, too, about her. This is not a nice story, but it's kind of funny. They told me whenever Betty Bacall was on the set of a movie, you know, they have the craft table gnome where they have all the, you know, the food for all right. the actors. And the, well, Lauren Bacall would always bring a big purse with her, and she would
take
all the food from the craft table, put it in the purse.
Like an old lady at a wedding.
Exactly. Well, the reason I once asked her about that, I said, you know, Betty, you got a reputation for stealing the food from the craft table. She said, I grew up in the Depression. It could come back, and I have to eat. She was a Depression baby. And, you know, no matter how successful you are, if you grow up in the Depression, you always think it could all fall apart tomorrow, because that's what they experience. So, all right. Do you have the little cut here now? The swamp is returning to Washington, led by John Kerry. There you go. That's it. Yes. A creature from the Black Lagoon. Not since the beginning of time, folks. Not since the beginning of time has the world known terror like this. The swamp people are back. John Kerry. Here he comes, out of the swamp. John Kerry, the creature from the Black Lagoon, is back in the Biden cabinet, along with a bunch of other swampy people. And get this. This is hilarious. John Kerry is going to be the climate czar. All right, now here's a guy. He's got private planes. He only travels by private plane,
yeah,
because he married the ketchup lady, Teresa Hines. He's got 20,000 houses around the world. Goes to see them on his private plane. He's got yachts, sailboats. The man is one of the biggest polluters on the planet, and he's going to be in charge of the climate? Are you kidding me? This is the swamp is back. No, the swamp is back. All those people. It's just ridiculous.
Well, you look at these names, you know, he's slowly filling out these cabinet posts, and so many of them are retreads. I mean, they're people we've seen before. We know their names. We've seen their faces. It's not good. It's looking pretty ugly.
I know. I mean, Janet Yellen, she seems like a nice lady. Actually, she looks like Yoda. Have you noticed that?
No.
She
does look like Yoda. Come on.
Doesn't she look like...
She does look a little like Yoda. I'll give you that.
Yoda's going to be our Secretary of the Treasury. There you go. All right. Stick around with us. We have a fun show for you this morning. Up next, our pal Chris Matthews, the political commentator, will be with us. What does he think? I'm curious to know what Chris thinks, because he knows the ins and outs of Washington better than anyone I know. What does he think about the return of the swamp? And at 8:40, you want to stick around for Bill Bratton. How dangerous has it become on the subways here in New York City? That's all coming up next, but now let's get the news. It is 7 o'clock.